Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT, a weekly conversation with people who are shaping the technology landscape. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Cynthia Stoddard to the broadcast. Cynthia is the Senior Vice President and Chief Information Officer of Adobe Systems, a $6 billion software company. She spearheads Adobe's global strategy for delivering services that form the mission-critical backbone of the company. Before joining Adobe, Cynthia was Chief Information Officer of NetApp, a data storage and management company. In 2016, Silicon Valley Business Journal named Cynthia a woman of influence. She's also a recipient of Computer World's Premier 100 IT Leaders Award. Cynthia holds a Bachelor of Science degree in accounting from Western New England University and an MBA from Merrillhurst University. I recently caught up with Cynthia from her office in San Jose, California, and our conversation covered world-class IT Principle 1, people, as Cynthia discussed improving employees' experiences by drawing on principles learned from improving the customer experience. We also discussed how she is using the characteristics of cloud technology to transform Adobe's IT department's strategy and culture, Lab 82, Adobe's collaborative workspace, and Adobe's transition to a software as a service company. She also offered advice to women interested in pursuing careers in technology and discussed Adobe's work in encouraging young women interested in STEM careers more generally. If you like what you hear, we'd be grateful if you'd give us a rating on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. Thank you. If you're a CIO of a company with $1 billion in revenue or above, please join me at the Forbes CIO Next Conference at Forbes on 5th in New York City on October 15th and 16th. I'll interview CIOs or also chief digital officers like Clark Golestani of Merck and Ish Sundaram of JetBlue, CIOs who are also operations executives like Kathy Bessant of Bank of America and David Thompson of Western Union. I'll also speak with entrepreneurs, venture capitalists, and executive recruiters, all of whom are shaping the technology landscape. To register, go to forbes.com/forbes-live/event/CIO-next. I hope to see you there. Cynthia Stoddard, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT. I should say welcome back to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Thank you, Peter. It's always a pleasure to talk with you.
I feel the same way. Thank you so much for taking this time. Cynthia, you've now been in role at Adobe about a year. The organization has been on quite a journey, transforming itself into a cloud business. And I wonder if you could take a moment and talk about maybe a brief overview of the journey of the company, generally speaking. But I'm also interested in the role that IT is playing in that journey. Can you take us through that for a few minutes?
People know of Adobe's history. Started to make the transition to software as a service, SaaS, away from box software, you know, a number of years ago, and have been quite successful doing that. And we're continuing to lead in the market with our tools, both on the creative side, document side, and then into the experience side. We have three clouds: Document Cloud, Creative Cloud, and then the Experience Cloud. So I'm really actually very, very proud to be part of the organization. And I'm really proud to have such a great IT team that's being able to help enable the business and their journey and the growth, the tremendous amount of growth that we've been having. You know, when I joined the organization and did an inventory of IT, one of the things that, you know, I like to say and report out is IT here isn't broken. It is actually quite solid. So coming in as a CIO, that's an absolutely wonderful situation to be placed into, because you can focus on the strategy for the future as opposed to going back and fixing a lot of issues. And, you know, when I look at Adobe's history, you know, and you look at how they moved from boxed software to software as a service and being a leader there, you know, IT at that time, what they needed to do is really open up those back office systems really to the world, if you think about it. Things used to, you know, billing and activity and was on a cycle, was all kind of hidden. You know, it would run, you know, batch at night or on the weekends. And when you move to a really a real-time online SaaS world, all of that gets exposed.
What a disruptive shift. How did the Adobe IT team manage that?
So what you need to do, and what Adobe did, is really move to a services mindset to be able to achieve the responsiveness, being able to link applications, microservices into the website, because the content before the transition was largely just a content website. It wasn't a transactional website. And now it processes millions and millions of transactions. So that was really the first step of the transformation in IT enabling by opening up, you know, that curtain to all of these back office systems and really enabling them to be real time, to be responsive, to be highly available. That was the role that IT played, because those transactions and the experience that your customers have has to be just right on. Experience from our products is absolutely superb. And the experience as you're going through any journey or life cycle using that to either purchase, get assistance, whatever, has to be of the same level and quality. So that's the first step of the transformation.
I'm curious, what did the team do to enable future growth and innovation?
The second step is really looking into the future and saying, what can IT do to prepare and further enable that growth? And what we've done here within Adobe IT is say, we need to really follow in the footsteps of the business and really have a customer experience centric strategy and really gear everything that we want to do around the customer. And I've always, and I think you know, always been a proponent of being very customer facing, because the customer drives everything. And if you get that in front of your staff, you're going to have a different mindset. You're going to look at things differently if you put yourself in the shoes of that customer. So what we're really trying to do here within IT is we've really evolved the IT strategy to be have cloud-like characteristics in our DNA. And, you know, if you think about a cloud and what the characteristics of a cloud are, and you think about bringing those characteristics of the cloud into everything that you do within IT, you're going to approach things differently. And when I talk about the characteristics of a cloud and applying them, I'm talking about every role in IT. And I'm not just talking about the IT infrastructure and operations and thinking about running that as a cloud provider. I'm thinking about if I'm a business analyst, how do I think about enabling my business processes when I'm working with those business users with self-service? You know, if I'm working in servicing the engineering groups, how do I help them out by self-provisioning? So, you know, there's a lot of different ways that you can apply the characteristics of a cloud. And, you know, when I talk to my team, I like to go through the seven characteristics of a cloud, which include on-demand, ubiquitous access, you know, resiliency, multi-tenancy, elasticity, location independence, you know, measured usage. And I like to give them examples of how they can take these different attributes and apply them in their day to day. And I have to say that, you know, it's been really interesting to see how IT has embraced it. Every month I run this monthly, what I call an operations business review. And there was one individual, you know, in the operations area that presented how he is looking at, you know, monitoring tools and some of the other operational capabilities that we have, and how he's embraced and how his team have embraced cloud-like characteristics by eliminating the human element in everything that they do. And I just was sitting there with my eyes wide open thinking, wow, this is really fantastic that getting to this level that people are actually taking the message that we need cloud-like characteristics in our DNA. And then, you know, using them in their day-to-day solutioning and how they are, you know, looking at their own behaviors and their own DNA within their team.
That's great. Oh, my goodness. What a great synopsis that was, Cynthia. Brings to mind, as I'm hearing you talk about Adobe's transformation, generally speaking, about IT's transformation, as someone who's been an IT executive multiple times over in different environments, you as a consumer of IT from a variety of different places must have some unique perspectives as somebody who has seen the evolution of infrastructure, as you've seen the evolution towards as a service models in a variety of different areas, certainly the migration to cloud. I'm curious, this great example you gave of the analogy of the principles of cloud and making people live them in some interesting and new creative ways. To what extent do you see you and your team as sort of the first customer or those who can provide your colleagues with the perspective that is akin to the ultimate buyers of Adobe's products who are oftentimes CIOs and IT executives more generally speaking?
We do operate, actually a number of different portions of Adobe operate as customer zero for our products, because, you know, our products are so widespread that there are, you know, a lot of applicability internally. You know, we do have a very strong relationship with, you know, the engineering group, so we can put these things to the test. You know, one of the examples that I really like to use is how we've, you know, embraced and are using some of our document cloud capabilities, you know, Adobe Sign within the organization. We use Adobe Sign, you know, in our human resources organization. You know, 55% of our new hires go through the process with Adobe Sign. So it speeds up the process significantly because we get signed documents back within 24 hours electronically. So it closes, you know, the candidates and gets them on board faster. We use this also in our procurement workflows, quite good to, you know, to speed up the completion cycle there. I think we've seen improvements around 70 to 73% in that area. And then, you know, we've been able to help the legal team also with their workflows for creating, editing, and reviewing documents. I've been a big proponent for our years about electronic documents and trying to get paper out of the workforce. And I think if you look at digitization and, you know, having your organization kind of step out on the edge a little bit out of their comfort zone and start experimenting with new tools, saying, how can we eliminate paper? How can we eliminate the need of that human element? Wonderful things can happen.
And you mentioned some of the implications from an HR and a hiring perspective. I know that part of the reorg that you began earlier this year involved taking employee-facing functions and centralizing them into IT. Can you talk a bit about the rationale for so doing and the benefits for having done so?
The world and us, you know, we've been very focused on the customer experience, outwardly facing customer experience, and that's a wonderful thing. But there's a lot of elements there that are really powerful when you think about how organizations, and in particular how Adobe provides that great experience to the customer. So if you think about that, and you think about, you know, who powers that experience internally, it's really your employees. The philosophy was, and the thought process was, why not take the same principles that we use to fuel that great customer experience on the outside and bring them inside of Adobe, inside to the employee? So what I did was look at different areas that would impact the employee. You can think about it as things like the desktop support, collaboration tools, processes, supporting the processes from hire to retire, you know, video, you know, anything that an employee uses, how they get, you know, onboarded and things like that, processes there. And I put them under one leader. And I think that's been really powerful because what she's been able to do and what her charter is really to look across the organization and say, what type of personas do we have? What type of personas do we have, you know, with individuals? What type of personas do we have, you know, within teams, you know, how do teams operate? And how do we gear the tools to those particular personas? Because one tool set is not going to fit all. So if you think about it, you know, an engineering group, because we have, you know, a high number of engineers, it's going to require a different tool set and a different level of technology support than somebody doing sales. Two different things. And I think organizations, you know, try to standardize. I remember actually years and years ago, it was like, okay, you know, I would say you get one laptop and that's it. And here's your tool set. And I think as CIOs, we really have to change our mindsets away from, you know, this rigid set of standards, you know, to make it easier to manage, to really put yourself in the position of the employee or the consumer and say, you know, what do they need in order to be successful, to collaborate with their teams, both inside and outside of the company, you know, to share documents, to share designs, you know, what workspaces, you know, really will suit them going into the future. And we've done a lot here with workspaces also that I can talk about. But the whole idea behind it was to really build that repository of tools that are more specific and tailored to the persona so that the people have the great experience. It's not just about IT being able to standardize and support easily.
Very interesting. And obviously you operate in Silicon Valley, at least your headquarters, you have offices around the world, but in a place where the need for people, the war for talent, so to speak, is particularly acute. It's been interesting to hear you talk about the personas, the way you've thought about evolving this. And I'm curious, especially with regard to the next generation workforce, the millennials, but what sorts of changes you have made in terms of workspaces, work practices to accommodate some of what you have found to be evolving needs of the younger workforce?
So on the millennials, that's actually a driving factor. They want tailored, personalized experiences, applications, training, resources, really, really important. And if you think about it, you really need to be able to point and click. If you think about I'll call it the old days, you know, you have to kind of go through various levels of clicks in order to get to a particular item. Millennials and new workforce coming in, they want that consumer experience. Just being able to click and get to, you know, what they need to access. They don't want to have to search through a number of different templates or screens or this, that, or the other thing. But the other thing that is really important too is, I would say, a consistent experience, because we are not, you know, just geared and tied to that one PC or one laptop anymore. I know myself, I have my mobile phone, my iPhone, I use my iPad, I use a variety of different surfaces to work on and gather information. The experience as you jump from, you know, surface to surface, from, you know, iPad to a laptop to whatever, should be consistent. Because if you're doing a particular function, you shouldn't have to relearn it as you move from surface to surface. It's really important that, you know, when you look at these internal apps and tools, that they're built really with responsive design principles so that employees have a consistent and seamless experience. And if you think about it, and going back to what I was talking about with the customer experience and just kind of tying in, you know, Adobe and what Adobe does with the customer experience. That's what we do with our customers. We provide them tools, and actually we use the same tools, those responsive design principles, so that they have a consistent experience. They're not having to relearn how to do everything when they move from surface to surface. So that would be kind of a call out point that I would say to other CIOs and other IT leaders, is really kind of put your employee as your personal consumer kind of in the limelight, and think about how you want your experiences to be as you're dealing with other companies and retailers through the different surfaces and different experiences that they offer you. And think about providing the same type of experience to your employees internally.
You mentioned that you're focusing on your workspace and environment. Can you tell me more about that?
On the workspaces, I think we have a really exciting story here at Adobe with workspaces. We've created a workspace that we call Lab 82. And you might be wondering what the name is all about, so I'll explain that. But it's really an ideation environment here where we can kind of pull people together and, you know, experiment, you know, try new things out. And we called it Lab 82 because Adobe was founded in 1982. And the founders of the company started an idea in a lab, and they really believe that good ideas can come from everywhere in the company. Think about it. Ideas just don't come from engineering. They just don't come from research. They can come from anywhere, any individual contributor in the company. December of 2016, Lab 82 was born. We use this for, is this really an environment that can introduce people to different types of technologies, you know, different types of collaboration technologies. So, for example, we experimented a bit with video conferencing with a 360-degree view, and it was really cool. Yeah, I had a meeting there to kind of test this stuff out, as a number of people did, and I had one of my leaders from India on the phone, and I said, "Hey, Shankar, can you see everything?" He's like, "Yeah, it's like I'm right in the room." It was really, really pretty exciting. People can walk around, you know, the piece of equipment, it tracks you, you know, you can have people sitting in different areas, and, you know, you're really, really well connected. So we use this lab in order to test technology out. It's actually a productive lab too, where people can have meetings and different sessions and, you know, be very productive, but we're able to, you know, get a heat map and see what people are using and how they're using it. So we're able to test and see whether or not the technology should be deployed more mainstream within Adobe. And we did get some feedback. You know, the space encouraged people to actually talk to each other. Because, you know, when you're in a meeting room, you know, with a rectangle table, sometimes you have to keep moving your head around in order to make contact. Well, we had in this room tables that were guitar pick shaped. So if you can imagine that and sitting around that, you have a better view of the people that you're talking to and that you're meeting with. So that was, you know, a takeaway. And people felt that since it was really open and bright colors and different things, that they can be their genuine self, you know, that they can really express themselves, that, you know, they didn't feel confined, you know, as they would in a conference room, perhaps with no windows. People were able to use the space to have offsite meetings, you know, team offsite. And then they felt that they could collaborate. The collaboration style was more open and more broad. So, you know, it's been a great experiment and we're continuing on with it. It's a problem solving space that we use for employees, but we're also able to gather a heat map information, as I said, to see which technology is being used and, you know, how the people are responding to chairs, tables, you know, different things. And then we tie this back to this persona initiative that we talked about a little bit earlier.
Very interesting. It's a great overview. I appreciate you taking that in such depth. You know, another topic that you and I've spoken about in the past that I'm curious just to get your latest thinking on is the sort of the state of the union of women in technology. You are, as I've mentioned a couple of times, you've been a CIO multiple times over, an IT executive for a number of years, and certainly somebody for women to look up to. And I wonder, as you continue to advance, what are your thoughts in terms of how well we're doing in terms of ensuring that women are getting involved in technology topics and rising with IT departments and the like?
I think we're doing better, but we're not doing as well as we should. I think it's going to take time because part of it is generational issue. You have to kind of grab them when they're young, right? And get them interested in technology or some of the STEM, STEAM principles when they're young. I had an absolutely amazing experience last week. You know, Adobe is one of the sponsors for the Girls Who Code program. I don't know if you've heard of that or not. We actually free up people, engineers within our organization in order to teach these girls how to code during the summer. It's a seven-week program. And I jumped in, you know, last week and spoke with the girls that were part of this program. You know, they're high school, you know, sophomore, junior type. You know, their experiences were amazing. And one of them said to me, this is a life-changing experience for me. Now I know coding can be a career for me. They, at an early age, were able to, you know, build this network of girls within the room that they're going to keep in touch with each other. They've built the most amazing apps that I have ever seen. I mean, the ideas were absolutely amazing. And what they had to do with not having any background in coding was just awesome. I mean, they did a tremendous job. I think that, you know, if we want to change the landscape, you know, within technology, you know, we have to invest in programs like that and also getting the word out to people who are in their career, early on in their career, and creating that support structure for them so that they have role models. And we can share some of our experiences that we've had as we've grown up in our careers and provide them the encouragement and the network so that they can be successful. When I get out and talk to some of the, you know, events and, you know, women, you know, some of the advice that I provide back to them, you know, is in a number of areas. And I have a lot of experiences and examples that I kind of jump out and talk to them about. Some of the important ones, I would say, number one is to stretch, move out of your comfort zone and try new things. It's really important to get out there and try different areas of technology, see what you like and you don't like, because it opens up your mind. You know, that's what I used to do, because I used to be able to say to everybody I did every role in IT, but now I can't say that anymore because technology has expanded so much with cloud technology and microservices and everything. But I tried lots of roles out within IT, and I found out what I liked and really what I didn't like. But it gave me that background to be broad, you know, in the topic, and then also deep in the areas that really were of interest to me. So I think that, you know, if there are, you know, women, you know, listening or reading some of this information, if you're in college or in school, try out different classes just to see what you like. You know, if you're beginning your career, try out different areas, volunteer for, you know, special projects just to see, you know, what's your appetite, you know, what your passion really is. Because unless you try it, you're not going to have that experience and know what you like and what you don't like. The other area is really around people in relationship, is really taking the time to get to know your peers. If you're in school, getting to know your teachers. If you're out of school and working, getting to know your managers, because that helps really enable trust and credibility. Because some people get to know you as a person. They just don't know you as, you know, the name or whatever, you know, working on a particular project or assignment. It can become, you know, a really powerful asset, communication and relationship building. And it's also, you know, a really effective way of minimizing stereotyping. Because sometimes, you know, people get stereotyped in the particular role that they're in, and they don't get known for their broader education or the broader skill set that they have from other companies. So if people get to know you, that type of stuff comes up in conversation. I'd say the third area is really market yourself. Educate people on your background, areas of expertise, interests, things like that. What I like to tell people is people can't read your mind. So if there's something of interest, if there is something that you're passionate about, speak up. Because people won't know it unless you tell them about it. Yeah, and take that initiative to make things known. What I told the girls who code last week was their voice was as equal to any other voice in the room. So never feel that your voice is of lesser equality. You have the best ideas, you have the best voice. So speak up and let people know what you think. And every question is a absolutely great question. And then the last bit of advice is really to be a champion. You know, make the time to be a mentor. I make the time to mentor people. I still mentor and talk to women who used to work for me because it's, you know, they like to keep in touch with, you know, things that are going on in their career and bounce ideas off of me and share the experiences. You know, if you're in school, share experiences with girls and boys. You know, if you're starting your career, build that network, get into different groups because your experiences really matter and people are going to learn and they're going to remember that you actually took the time to share experiences. Peter, just kind of, you know, recapping, it's really important to get girls interested as they're very early on in their education, you know, and then kind of help foster that as they go through college, give them those good experiences, and then get a structure, you know, as they begin their work environment. So they have a support structure and they can see that other women have been successful and have been able to, you know, go broad and go deep in those areas that really are of interest to them.
What an inspiring message. I appreciate you walking through that as well, Cynthia. I wanted to conclude with a question just about trends. We've certainly spoken about a number of them, whether it's the push for the cloud, microservices, data and personalization, the personas that you've spoken about several times, among others. Are there others that we've not mentioned that are on your roadmap and beginning to excite you as you look to, say, the 2 to 3 year time horizon?
I've always loved analytics and data. I think you know that. So one of the trends that is, you know, emerging and, you know, is right out there, and I think in front of everybody today is AI and ML, artificial intelligence and machine learning. I just think that that has such an absolutely tremendous opportunity to impact and enhance business processes all the way, you know, starting IT operations, looking at how you look at ticket management, you know, self-healing, going into customer service, how you look at providing a level of great customer service by, you know, augmenting knowledge bases and being able to help the agents provide quicker and more tailored responses to the customer, all the way into back office operations and augmenting, you know, processes with that intelligence to really have more of a data-driven organization, you know, so that you can make data-driven decisions as opposed to after-the-fact decisions. So I just see a tremendous amount of power coming out of that technology that is really going to, I think, take IT on its next wave of a journey in order to really drive a tremendous amount of value into the business.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, Cynthia Stoddard, thank you so much for taking some time and joining us again on the Forum on World Class IT. It's always a pleasure speaking with you.
It's always a pleasure also, Peter. I really enjoy our conversation.
Thanks for listening to the Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please rate us on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. And please join me next week when my guest will be Alan Treffler, the founder and CEO of Pegasystems, a $750 million software company. You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call MetaStrategy's Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategy's five principles of World Class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy-setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.